hearing procedure. This is time and place for a hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider public hearing order number R1-2009-0006 to consider termination of waste discharge requirements and national pollutant discharge elimination system permit for Evergreen Pulp, Small Pulp Mill, NPDES number CA0005894, WDID number 1B77005OHUM. This item is properly noticed. Sheet explaining the procedures for this hearing is available at the handout table. Will all those expected to give testimony in this matter please stand? Raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that you will tell the truth in this matter? We'll begin with the staff presentation. If I may just interrupt a second, my sense is we're probably here on two items for the pulp mill. We'll probably take us up.
You are correct. I've done to the best of my ability to go through the document and correct the relevant monitoring location numbers and ranges. However, there are inevitable difficulties when going into one of these huge documents, and I had to balance different goals, one of which was to focus on just these changes, and the other one was to create a completely accurate permit. And that's one example of something that got missed. However, it's showing a range, so it's not overly restrictive. I would consider that fine.
All right, that's good. All right, other board questions, comments? Any final staff comments?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Norton.
I would like to request, just that this model really, you haven't discharged this year. You really haven't had a chance to verify this. And at some point in the future, I'd like to hear verification on this. Maybe just through the executive officer report would be fine. You don't have to come before, or maybe
sure.
So. At the same time, this is the second time that we've had a change to the filter, the 5 gallons per square foot. This is the second time. I realize that's a Title 22 requirement. We did it last meeting, I believe, with Guerneville. Same thing, since it's a performance criteria and not a mandated Title 22 right criteria, I guess I'm just interested, is that something we're going to see more often? Is that number 5 that's in Title 22 unrealistic? Are we going to see more of that? And it's just a question that if we get a report back, I'd just like to hear if from a performance criteria, does your filters performed to manufacturer spec and meet that requirement. So I would just request that we get some feedback on this and at some time in the future. I realize your discharge season this year is over basically before it even started, but that we get some information back.
Absolutely. Definitely happy to provide that.
Great.
Okay. Entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, so moved.
Second.
Any comment? All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to go on. Item 5. Read the hearing procedure. This is time and place for hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider public hearing order number R1-2009-0006 to consider termination of waste discharge requirements and national pollutant discharge elimination system permit for Evergreen Pulp, Small Pulp Mill, NPDES number CA0005894, WDID number 1B77005OHUM. This item is properly noticed. Sheet explaining the procedures for this hearing is available at the handout table. All those expect to give testimony in this matter, please stand. Raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that you will tell the truth in this matter? We'll begin with the staff presentation. If I may just interrupt a second, my sense is we're probably here on two items for the pulp mill. Will probably take us up through lunch, unless I hear belief otherwise. So if you're here for another item, just that's informational. The board will probably take a break at the end of these five items, five and six. But we'll see.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Charles Reed. I'm Water Board Staff Engineer. This is item number five, consideration of termination of waste discharge requirements for Evergreen Pulp Mill. I'd like to introduce the file into the record. My presentation this morning will consist of an overview of the Sonoma Pulp Mill, the facility location, operations and ownership. I'll focus on a recent owner of Evergreen Pulp Mill, including a compliance history since 2005. I'll present our staff rationale for recommending termination of the permit. I'll go through some of the next steps that we see. The community of Samoa is located in Humboldt County, and it's across Humboldt Bay from the city of Eureka. The pulp mill itself is located on the Samoa Spit, a stretch of land that separates Humboldt Bay from the Pacific Ocean. But I think we all knew that. This aerial photo of the pulp mill was taken in 2005 and shows the layout of the mill. I draw your attention to the piles of wood chips that serve as the raw material for pulp production. This building houses the boiler. These are clarifiers for the water treatment plant, where fresh water is piped from the Mad River, approximately 15 miles north of the pulp mill. It's treated for removal of suspended solids and used for pulp production and for fire protection. Processed wastewater and some stormwater is discharged to an ocean outfall whose terminus is located about 1.5 miles offshore at a depth of approximately 75 feet. Since operations of the mill ceased in October of last year, at least 3 million gallons a day of fresh water from the Mad River has been discharged through the outfall to prevent siltation of the outfall pipe. Discharge is set to be significantly reduced on April 30th. And I'd also point out that the outfall is also shared by Fairhaven Power Plant for their effluent discharge. The Samoa pulp mill uses a Kraft process to convert wood residuals into wood pulp. The process involves the chemical digestion of wood pulp, of wood chips, to dissolve chemical bonds between the lignin and cellulose in the wood to produce pulp. The digested pulp is then washed to separate the pulp from the pulping chemicals and wood waste, and either sold as brown stock or bleached to produce a brighter pulp product. A key feature of the Kraft process is the recovery and recycling of pulping chemicals to create an essentially closed chemical system. Until 1995, the Samoa pulp mill produced bleached Kraft pulp using elemental chlorine as a bleaching agent. However, with elemental chlorine comes significant environmental threats due to effluent toxicity, toxic compounds such as dioxin in the effluent discharge, and the inherent safety hazard from storage of large volumes of liquid chlorine. In response to these threats, and with help from an EPA consent decree, Louisiana Pacific, the mill owner in 1995, switched to a totally chlorine-free bleach process in 1995 to reduce effluent toxicity and to eliminate the threat of accidental chlorine release to the community. From 2005 to 2007, Evergreen Pulp produced exclusively unbleached pulp for shipment to Asia for its parent company's paperboard mills. In January of 2008, Evergreen brought the TCF bleach process back online in response to market conditions and produced both bleached and unbleached pulp. The effluent guidelines for Kraft mills require limits for biochemical oxygen demand, total suspended solids, and pH. The Samoa pulp mill relies on internal process controls to meet effluent limits based on these effluent guidelines rather than in the pipe secondary treatment. The pulp mill began operation as a pulp mill in 1965. Prior to that time, the pulp mill site was operated as a plywood mill by Georgia Pacific. Mill facilities were transferred in 1973 to a newly created company, Louisiana Pacific, as a result of a Federal Trade Commission order for GP to divest some of its assets. Major improvements under Louisiana Pacific are related to water quality, were the elimination of the chlorine bleaching process in 1995 to comply with chronic toxicity limits, and the extension of the outfall in 1998 to minimize effects of the discharge to recreational users of the Pacific Ocean. The next two owners, Samoa Pacific Cellulose and Stockton Pacific, struggled with profitability and permit compliance before the mill was sold to Evergreen Pulp in January of 2005. Evergreen Pulp unexpectedly sold the mill in October of last year to Worthy Pick LLC, a holding company incorporated in the British Virgin Islands with links to Lee and Mann, the parent company of Evergreen Pulp Incorporated. The current owner, Freshwater Pulp, obtained the assets of the Samoa pulp mill in February of this year. Now I'll present a timeline of the period of Evergreen Pulp's ownership of the Samoa pulp mill. January 21st, 2005, the Evergreen Pulp assumed mill operations, and they became permittee in a permit transfer from Stockton Pacific to Evergreen Pulp in March of that year, March 2005. In June 28th, 06, the five-year term of the MPDS permit expired. However, the permit was administratively extended after Evergreen submitted a report of waste discharge and a compliance plan. August 1st, 08, an ACL complaint was issued for violations of BOD effluent limits for the period of March 1st, 2005 through December 31st, 2007. The violations cited included 4 violations of the daily maximum and 11 violations of the monthly average limits for BOD during that 34 months of operation. A settlement for these violations was ultimately reached for $463,000. Payment for this has not been received. September 19th, 08, a draft order for renewal of the pulp mill's MPDS permit was circulated for public comment. The comment period for this action ended on October 20th. Last year. On October 15th, 2008, staff became aware that Evergreen had sold the pulp mill to Worthy Pick. We were not informed of this sale. 2 days later, Evergreen ceased operations as a result of a downturn in market conditions. At the time, Evergreen estimated the mill would restart in 3 to 6 months. Next month, in November 24th, regional board staff became aware of the impending sale of the pulp mill to yet a third party. December 18th, 08, staff notified the then prospective owner that future permit requirements would be more stringent than the existing Evergreen permit and offered to discuss permitting issues. This prospective buyer later withdrew from escrow. January 7th, 09, the executive officer issued a notice of intent to terminate the Evergreen permit. The comment period for this action closed on February 6th, 09. January 22nd, 09, the executive officer and staff met with Bob Simpson, who is representing the second prospective buyer, to discuss permit requirements and the buyer's plan to comply with the existing permit. January 27th, 09, the executive officer issued an ACL complaint for BOD violations occurring from January 2008 through October 08. These violations involved violations of bleach limits when the mill was producing both bleached and unbleached pulp. And they included 143 violations of the daily maximum allowable BOD. That was roughly 50% of the time that they were discharging in 09. They also violated the monthly average limit in 9 of the 10 months of operation in 09. The proposed mandatory minimum penalty for these violations is $453,000, and this item is before you today as the next item. February 6, 2009, the date of closing of the first comment period, the Samoa Acquisition Corporation acquired the assets of the pulp mill. The purchaser's name was later changed to Freshwater Pulp Company. March 31, 2009, Freshwater Pulp indicated that the mill would remain shut until conversion of the mill to an integrated pulp and paper mill is completed. This process was estimated to take a minimum of 2 years to complete. April 1st, 09, Freshwater Pulp met with the U.S. EPA and the Regional Water Board Executive Officer to discuss permit compliance options. And April 23rd is today, and we're discussing whether to, or we're considering whether to terminate the permit. So the question before you today is whether to terminate the permit or whether not to. This slide presents our reasoning for recommending permit compliance. First, as I explained in the previous slides, the discharge is in significant compliance with terms of the existing permit. The permit is also out of date. It was last updated in 2001. The 2000 order was a simple name change, reissuing the permit under Stockton Pacific Enterprises. It doesn't include new requirements and recent amendments to the 2005 Ocean Plan. The existing permit does not contain the requirements and limitations that are necessary, but not yet established for the previously permitted discharge, including bleached and numerically lower unbleached limits for kraft pulp, water quality-based effluent limits for toxic pollutants that were shown through monitoring results to have reasonable potential to exceed water quality objectives, and it also lacks receiving water monitoring requirements sufficient to assess the impact on water quality of the receiving water. The existing permit, deficient as it is not appropriate for an integrated pulp and paper mill, as is the current conceptual proposal before us. Finally, continuing discharges requiring permit coverage, such as stormwater and cleanup and maintenance waits during extended shutdown, can be authorized under other permits. The diversion of fresh water from the Mad River through the outfall pipe does not require a permit. The comment period for this agenda item was set from January 7th to February 6, 2009. At the request of the pulp mill's new owner, who assumed control of the mill on the closing date of the comment period, the comment period was extended to February 23rd. Bob Simpson, on behalf of new owners of the pulp mill, submitted comments on February 23rd, requesting that the board withdraw the draft termination order. He stated that terminating the permit was unnecessary because the mill was not currently producing pulp and the new owner would comply with all conditions of the existing permit. Mr. Simpson submitted a second letter on April 3rd after the close of the comment period, requesting that the executive officer administratively transfer the existing NPDES permit from evergreen pulp to freshwater pulp because the new owner may want to discharge wastewater from maintenance, upkeep, and cleaning operations during the shutdown period. And it, I should note that the discharges from these operations is currently authorized under the evergreen permit. The comment letters from Riverwatch, Forest Unlimited, Friends of the Garcia River, Coast Action Group, all objected to transfer of the existing permit. They supported revocation of the permit and recommended that the new owner submit a report of waste discharge for its new operations. Other comments, written and provided by phone from the public, were mixed, with some in support of permit termination and some asking for the board's support of the troubled mill and its employees. So based on the foregoing, staff recommended the board terminate the NPDES permit for the Evergreen Pulp Mill, for Evergreen Pulp. There has been some concern raised whether it might be necessary to keep the permit open to enable the continuation of discharges to the outfall from Fairhaven Power and for discharges of stormwater from the pulp mill. Staff have concluded that the termination of the Evergreen NPDES permit will not affect either continuing discharge, because the stormwater discharge through the outfall is allowable with coverage under the statewide industrial stormwater permit. We've requested that the current owner enroll freshwater pulp under this permit for discharges of the stormwater to the ocean outfall and have freshwater pulp revise and update its stormwater pollution prevention plan to reflect this newly regulated stormwater discharge. With respect to the Fairhaven discharge, freshwater pulp has indicated that it will modify the outfall to allow a discharge of up to 1 million gallons a day to keep the outfall open for future operations, including an allotment of up to 500,000 gallons per day for the discharge from the Fairhaven power plant. In terms of the issue of discharge of wastewater associated with mill upkeep and cleaning, we haven't received yet any detailed information from freshwater pulp regarding what types of discharges may need to occur. If such discharges need to occur, we can permit those at that time. So with that, I'll conclude my presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Mr. Corbett.
I just had two quick questions. One, I wanted to reaffirm that you indicated that you think potable drinking water from Humboldt Municipal Water District, if it was discharged to the pipeline, wouldn't require a separate permit.
That yes, that's what we understand, and EPA confirmed that.
Thank you. The other is you'd mentioned TSS as an initial, and I think just to clarify the record, can you state what that is?
Can you repeat the question, please?
You had mentioned TSS, standard violations, and, TSS, effluent limitations had been promulgated, and just for the record, can you clarify what that is?
Total suspended solids.
Okay. And one last question. Does the current discharge cause a discoloration in the ocean waters?
I don't believe it does.
Okay, thank you.
I just wanted to clarify, I don't believe it's potable water that's coming from, I think it's water straight from the Mad River. That's our understanding.
Well, actually, we require pretreatment and then it comes out, but yes.
I'm sorry, when you say pretreatment, so you're...
Well, it's, I believe, run through the Humboldt Municipal Water District. Maybe I'm wrong on that.
I don't believe so.
Do you have a separate pipeline?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's our understanding it's coming straight from the Mad River, which would make a difference in our mind in terms of whether or not it would need an NPDES permit. If it was potable water, it would likely need an NPDES permit coming through.
Okay.
The
Thank
water
you.
Straight
Thanks
from
for the
Mad
clarification.
Appreciate it. In our opinion, would not.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
I have speaker cards. Mr. Robert Simpson.
And I just, Mr. Chairman, wanted to note I don't believe that there's anyone here from Evergreen, but they may. That order would generally allow Evergreen to go first.
The chair will ask, is there anyone here from Evergreen? Record shows silence. So thank you.
Good morning. I'm Bob Simpson with Freshwater Pulp. Thank you for making the trip up here today. First, what I'd like to do, if I can, is try and clarify a few things. They're not critical, but they should be updated. For starters, the end of our outfall diffuser is at 110 feet rather than 75 feet deep. Not significant, but that's, I'd like to set the record straight. If we go back at the period of time where Louisiana Pacific committed to chlorine-free, that was during my era as a general manager for Louisiana Pacific. My first initial meeting with EPA was in June of 1992, at which time we committed to converting the mill to chlorine-free. I think one of the mistakes we made was calling it chlorine-free. We should have called it dioxin-free, which was really what we were trying to eliminate. In 1994, we came on. I noticed that the projection said 1995, but 1994 was when we first began using hydrogen peroxide as a bleaching agent rather than chlorine. And then the last point that I noticed I could understand how it could be confusing, but Worthy Pick didn't actually buy Evergreen pulp. That wasn't the transaction. The transaction was there was a series of companies. This is one of the most complex business structures I've ever seen. But there were a series of companies under Lee and Mann, and one of those companies was Worthy Pick. Worthy Pick acquired the shares of U.S. L&M, which is U.S. Lee and Mann, and HK L&M. Both of those are Colorado companies, and both of those companies then owned the shares of Evergreen Pulp. So, in fact, Evergreen Pulp's interest never was changed. It was the ownership of U.S. L&M and HK L&M that changed. So, complicated, but may help you out in the future.
Mr. Simpson, if I may just inquire of staff, are you clear on that? Do you want to request that in writing, or is that somewhere otherwise written down? It's hard to do it verbally, I know that.
It's not probably relevant for this right now, but we'll follow up with Mr. Simpson if it may be relevant.
Okay. Thank you.
For our ACL.
The remaining records, I would agree with all. I guess for me, the acquisition of the pulp mill was something that allows me to come back and try and complete a vision. The vision that I had for Louisiana Pacific in 1992 was to be the first in North America to convert to a chlorine-free, dioxin-free process. I didn't realize that in 2009 we'd still be the only one. I won't go into all of the reasons for that today, but I still believe that the commitment to dioxin-free was the right decision for a whole host of reasons. The challenge that the mill has had since converting and beginning to implement the process in 1994 is that chlorine-free is a more expensive process of manufacturing pulp, significantly more expensive. Some would tell you $100 a ton. Some would tell you $660 a ton. But it is more expensive. It also slows the production of the pulping process down, or at least it did for Louisiana Pacific. The next step of that is that you have to have a market that will pay you for the recognition of what you've done. And the mill has never been in a position to get paid for that, nor has it been in a position to properly position itself in the market as a very green product. The reason for that is that pulp is not a consumer product. Until you make something from that pulp, it's just a market pulp. It should go into products like paper, like whether it be writing paper, whether it be tissue paper, whether that be corrugated. We've made the decision to convert the mill into tissue. If you want me to be more specific, that would be toilet tissue as well as toweling. And I'll share a few numbers with you. In the state of California, there's about roughly 750,000 tons of tissue products used, of which about 50 to 55% of that is toilet tissue. The Samoa mill, if we go all the way back to 1965, was built as about a 500-ton-per-day mill. That was later increased by Louisiana Pacific to about 600 tons. Fast forward to evergreen pulp, and at times the mill was pushing over 700 metric tons. When I talk tons, I'm talking short tons. There's a difference of 10%. So they were putting out significantly more production than we did as Louisiana Pacific. So when I look at it today, if all we did was to convert the mill into toilet tissue, we actually, first let's go back, we intend to reduce our production from about 600 tons a day to somewhere in the range of 520 to 550 tons. That's by design. We intend to change the mix of our wood pulp chips, which will also change our production speed. Specifically, when you use more redwood, the bulk density of a redwood chip is less than for Doug fir, and therefore your digester, even though it's putting the same volume through, it comes out with less tonnage. So the short of it is that our production at 181,000 tons would be about a 40% market share in California of just toilet paper. The significant thing that I'd like to get across to you before I really kind of get into the meat of this is that I want to give you a bit of an eye-opener. And I find these numbers interesting, and I think you will too, because I don't think that when you have to have a vision if you're going to own a pulp mill. Pulp mill, we all get caught up in branding and labeling things. You can be labeled green, okay? You can be labeled a pulp mill. And I hate to say it, but the connotation of a pulp mill, and I'm sure in this room, is that's a dirty, nasty thing. It doesn't necessarily have to be. The challenge is that you have to ask yourself, why does a pulp mill exist? A pulp mill exists to use forest residuals. Those residuals can be a pulp chip from a sawmill, or they can be what people like to refer to as a weed tree in the case of tan oak in the coastal redwood region. This mill, when we're finished, will consume approximately 50% tan oak chips, 40% redwood chips, and 10% Doug fir chips. According to Dr. John Shelley at UC Berkeley, and I happen to agree with him, there is a significant volume of tan oak in the coastal redwood region, about 4,000, equivalent of 4,000 board feet per acre. That's about 25 tons per acre. That has to be sustainable in my eyes as well, even though everybody wants to call it a weed tree. It's also a food tree, if you will. But that is a significant volume of material. Now, what's happening today is there's no prescription in that raw material. Therefore, the opportunity for us is to be able to open up a market for that product. Now, the significance of that is, and here's how a pulp mill should be integrated. We have to look at the forest even though we don't own timberlands. And the reason this is really critical is last year we had forest fires in the coastal redwood region. That is not a common occurrence. The reason that occurs is because foresters only have one prescription today for killing off tan oak trees, and that's hack and squirt. They leave the dead trees standing. When they do fall, they leave, again, biomass on the forest floor, but that acts like a candle. Lightning goes off, fires happen, and then they spread. And we saw what happens with that last year in Mendocino County. I'd like to help out with that, and that at the same time it stabilizes our raw material. It so happens right now it's the second or third best wood fiber that we know of for tissue products. It has more fiber per square inch. That's the significance. In redwood, by making a market for redwood, that forest, depending on the closer you get to the ocean, the heavier the redwood stand. The further away you get on the outer edge, about 30 miles inland, you begin to have more Doug fir. Redwood has very little BTU value, and mostly it can't be exported either because people, they've got the same problem we do in a digester. You can't get as much volume in a ship because of the bulk density. So what's happened is it's never been exported. Well, that's a good thing for us. But if we all sit in a meeting like we are today and we look at what the pulp mill does, it consumes fiber that is less desirable by others. It consumes products that we otherwise would devalue as fuel. And this is a significant number. For every log sawn in a sawmill, 35% of that log is chips. 35%. 50% is lumber, 35% is chips, about 13% is bark, and the balance is sawdust and shavings. The average sawmill on a one-shift basis uses about 7,500 truckloads a year of logs, about 30 million feet. The pulp mill uses about 40,000 truckloads of pulp chips. So if you look at a sawmill on a one-shift basis, we're consuming effectively 5 to 6 sawmills worth of their byproducts, or their logs, if you will. We consume about, again, significantly more than that when you consider that 35% of their log, only 35% comes to us. The significance is this: we're a recycling plant, if you will. Okay, now, that doesn't mean that a mill needs to be a polluter, and that's what we're all here for today. Okay, so what we're here for today is to find out, again, how we feel about the permit. We don't object to the staff's recommendations. I don't plan on being a polluter for a single day. The permit doesn't apply to a pulp and tissue mill. We intend to be a pulp and tissue mill. I will go on record. I've said this to Ms. Coleman, and I will go on record as here today. If the mill runs again as a craft pulp mill, it will not be run by freshwater pulp and its current ownership. The mill has failed economically, even under Louisiana Pacific, because it wasn't integrated. It cannot compete. You have a 600-ton pulp mill per day competing with mills around the world that are 2,000 tons. But we have to make this mill competitive, because if we don't make it competitive, then essentially we're all responsible for exporting pollution, because the pulp mills are moving to the developing countries. Y'all watch the Olympics, and we know what goes on in developing countries. They don't have the same controls that we have. So what we should be doing is tightening up our controls, meeting all requirements, and that is possible to do. I have no concerns. Now, if we have to go to secondary treatment, which I'd like not to, but if we do, we will. But that answer will be ultimately decided by engineers. Whether that number is 7,500 pounds a day of BOD or whether that number is 10,000 pounds a day of BOD, you can hit either number. It's a case of how you get there. This mill has always decided to use pollution prevention as opposed to secondary treatment. Secondary treatment sounds like a great thing. I don't view it that way. Secondary treatment's where you send your mistakes. That's what happens. It sounds funny, but we actually have to we have to eliminate some of our pollution controls in the mill in order to create bugs in secondary treatment. And then we get to haul off one truckload of sludge a day to a hazardous landfill. That, to me, is a bit short-sighted. So what I'd like to do is spend the time, spend the money, try and do it right up front and find out whether or not we can be that model. Our goal is to be the pulp and tissue industry model in the United States. I'd like to think that somebody will take some leadership in that. It's controlled by three large companies.
I'm going to steer you towards it.
I'm going right for you.
Including the statement.
here's why we believe the permit shouldn't have been terminated. Again, I want to point out that we're not objecting, but we felt like these were the reasons. The permit's been in place continually since the late 1980s. It has been up for renewal for a while. There is no argument about that. There's been a proposal to terminate the permit, which means we'd be starting from scratch with a new permit. And again, we are kind of starting from scratch because we're a pulp and tissue mill. We think that the termination of a permit is extraordinary in the state of California. We think it's an extraordinary event. That doesn't necessarily make it a bad thing. It's just extraordinary. We believe that there's two reasons given for termination. One is that the previous owner, Evergreen, exceeded the BOD limits in the existing permit when it was making bleached TCF pulp last year during the final 8 months of its operation. We don't deny that Evergreen was making heavy to brown stock. We don't intend on ever making brown stock again. That's a bleach craft mill. It's always been a bleach craft mill. But that doesn't mean that bleach craft mills don't, from time to time, make brown stock. I just don't intend to do that. The other is that the board staff questioned whether the mill can meet new requirements set forth in a revised permit issued to Evergreen in draft form last year. So if we address those two grounds of termination, first ground, the violations, Evergreen did make a lot of unbleached pulp. It was meeting BOD limits that were set at that point in time, but it should have, because your BOD should be less when you're making brown stock than when you're making bleached stock. The good news was there wasn't a smelly secondary treatment plant that on site, and I guess that's a good thing. The bad news was it exceeded BOD limits. They did have trouble meeting BOD limits during the last few months of its operation when they made the TCF, but the point is that was Evergreen. That's not freshwater. Freshwater doesn't have a violation. We haven't operated a single day. We've asked the permit to be transferred to our name, specifically because, once again, we felt that allowed us to continue to deal with things like our stormwater. But I do agree that that can be handled separately. It's the word can. It just hasn't yet. We have to work on that together. I will say this, that the staff is it's not just cooperation. It's felt like a team. We're on the same page. We haven't had any disagreements. We do think that this could be done administratively. Staff disagrees, and that's okay. That's their prerogative. We believe that, again, that if the justification for doing that is simply Evergreen, that becomes moot because they're not around anymore. There's no reason to think that we're going to be a violator, again, if we've already said that we'll be down for 2 years. During that period, we will address the BOD issues as they apply to a pulp mill and a tissue mill. Again, BOD issues they've always been a limitation problem, but we believe there's good science. I've read it. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a chemist. But from what I've gathered and can read, even at numbers as high as 20,000 pounds a day of BOD at the outfall line, that doesn't appear to present any problems at the end of our diffuser, primarily because of the location, the receiving waters. One of the things that the pulp industry has been really successful in doing as a lobbying group, and this is out of the hands of the staff, is there is no difference in a receiving water whether it's going into a creek, a river, a lake, or an ocean. And so whether it's from EPA's viewpoint or whether it's from water quality's viewpoint, you just have to force us to meet the federal guidelines. And so, again, the lobbying efforts of the industry they've done a great job. They haven't done a great job for this pulp mill, but it is significantly different. You know, there's just by the sheer volume alone, it's a difference. But volume in the eyes of a permit doesn't make it right.
And if you would, just finish.
Yep. So the second ground for the permit being terminated, again, is if we look at our actions going forward, we're really in an interim position today. So here's our concern, if I can just lay it out. Our concern is that what if 2 years from now, while we're building this pulp mill, what if we still didn't have a permit in place? All a permit really does is it gives you a fallback position to operate. I understand that argument. But given where we are today with water quality, I don't believe that that's going to be an issue for us. I feel like they have shown all of the desire to put a new permit in place, and we've shown all the desire to work with them. Our goal is to build trust. We think that's what this comes down to. So we're willing to enter into an agreement and begin to negotiate a new agreement that puts us all into compliance. We look forward to the better days of operating a pulp and tissue mill where you don't have to see us very frequently.
Okay. Thank you. Board member, have questions? And I would.
Thanks.
Thank you. Carol Binder.
Hi, I'm Carol Binder. I live in Eureka. I live in West Eureka, within view of the pulp mill. I would ask you not to renew or to transfer the water permit for Evergreen, our freshwater pulp. You know, since I live so close and I've been to a lot of meetings and was very upset about what was happening with the mill, I, you know, checked out about pulp mills and whatever. And this facility is very old. They put pollution controls on two pieces of equipment, and that did cost them a lot of money, but it's small change in view of what it would take to fix up this facility. As a whole, it's old and run down. I sat at the meeting where I think they were called Tetra Tech. The outside consulting firm showed pictures and testified about the poor condition of the mill. Its operation since then seems to show that they were right. By the way, in those meetings, they also talked about the dioxin coming out of the mill. I live in West Eureka, as I said, and what I and my neighbors have experienced is the air pollution. I realize this hearing is about the water, but the air is a visible sign about the overall functioning of this mill and its ability to meet environmental standards. Our experience tells us that the pollution released by the mill was far worse than has been reported. The smoke and ash coming from the mill would worsen at night as soon as they figured everybody was gone except for the people of West Eureka. We could see ash falling in the porch light and can see it on cars in the morning. We experienced difficulty breathing and nausea. My husband was admitted to the hospital a day after one of their little incidents with breathing difficulties. Often there would be a sudden release of toxins. You'd be driving down Broadway and you'd say, whoa, was there a huge fire? No, it was a sudden release from the mill. By the time the air district got there, it was over. They would shut it down or slow it down when regulators or dignitaries came to town. Now we find out that the same thing is happening to the ocean. A change in ownership does not change the overall condition of the mill and their inability to function without poisoning the water and the air. From what I've learned about mills, just, you know, just surfing the internet and trying to find out, a pulp mill by its very nature is a polluter. You can make less pollution, but you will not make it not pollute. Please prevent this mill from continuing to pollute the water and the air by revoking their permit. Do not transfer this permit to the new owner. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for coming. Patrick Etchison.
My name is Patrick Etchison, and my wife and I live and own a home on California Street in Eureka, and our home is about three or four blocks from the piers that you see out there. So we have a personal interest in the mill and that part of the bay that it affects. As your staff has indicated, this mill over more than four decades has had a whole series of owners. And if you look at the environmental record, actually none of these owners has actually been able to prevent serious environmental pollution from this facility. Not being a professional, I don't know the exact reason for this. I would suspect it's part, you know, economics, and perhaps also it has to do with the very complex interactions between pulp and paper making, per se, and a natural environment. And, of course, this also affects the humans in this area. So I support your staff's recommendation that the discharge permit be terminated. The most recent unfortunate incident we've had with the pulp mill in Lee and Mann indicates that even a very well-financed international corporation with two large papermaking plants in mainland China and many other manufacturing facilities, for whatever reason, was not able to maintain adequate pollution control for this facility. This makes me very suspicious about promises by new owners when I don't know what their capitalization is. I think it would take extremely sound capitalization to perhaps make this mill environmentally safe. So I'm personally, my own opinion is that this more than 40-year-old facility is like a patient on life support, and perhaps it's time to pull the plug. I think you need to think about that seriously. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Sandra Mann.
Good morning. My name is Sandra Manns, M-A-N-N-S, and I live at 1255 C Street in Eureka, about less than 1 mile as the crow flies from the pulp mill. And I worked with a group of people who objected to variances being granted for the air quality standards for the pulp mill. And just to show you how long it takes to get these violations ended, we had to go to court and were joined by EPIC, the Sierra Club, and CATS, and fines were eventually imposed. New equipment was required, but as of today, the operator of the pulp mill has left and all of the new equipment hasn't been installed. So even though the pollution coming into the air is less than it was, it's a lot better. And now the pulp mill is shut down. We have had a hiatus for about 3 or 4 months, which has just been great. And I see the same thing happening with water quality. If the pulp mill is allowed to continue or to be reinstated and operational, any violations that are found will continue until enforcement can take effect, and that can be a long time. And my concern is for the for the birds, the mammals, the fish, the crustaceans, the plants, and other organisms that live in the bay, and for the surfers who use the bay, because all of them are exposed to the toxic waters. Sea life is dying, and everybody acts like they don't know what's causing it. Well, we know. It's a pollution. And it also extends to the damage also extends to humans. And their habitat, even though we live on a bay that is somewhat protected from the ocean waters, we are impacted in the long run by the changes to the environment. And I would like to point out that the weed tree that Mr. Simpson talks about, the tan oak, was a sacred tree to the Native Americans, and it was, and perhaps still is, a staple along with the salmon, and it saved many white people's lives that were wandering through the forests, and it got a lot of cattle through the winters. It's hardly a weed tree. And so I would highly recommend that you deny the request for the extension of this permit, and if it is ever reissued, to be extremely careful in doing that. But I would rather see the mill disappear. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, questions by board members or any concluding staff comments? I have one on the resolution, but
I just wanted to point your attention to the end of the resolution that says this will be terminated except for enforcement purposes. And that's relevant because we have an enforcement on this permit scheduled next.
Okay, so it's the last sentence on page 3 of the resolution. I'm one sentence above that on item 11.
Below item 11, yeah.
Yeah, you're below, I'm above. I'm on item 11 in terms of the date. We should change March 12th. To today's date.
Okay.
With that, Mr. Corbett?
I had one question to staff. Do we need a ruling from the chair on the April 20th United States Environmental Protection Agency letter to get it in the record or not as a late submittal, or is that automatically deemed part of the record?
No, I think that would be good for the... if we want it in the record to have the board, the chair make that decision about the late, the letters that came in after the comment period.
So you said letters. Are there more than the EPA letter then?
You know, I believe Mr. Simpson's letter of April 3rd also came in after the... I believe it was a March deadline for March 20-something deadline. So the April 3rd letter would also be submitted late.
All right.
I'd request both the chairman and or both in the record.
Chair will rule to include both those letters.
Okay.
With that, entertain a motion for item 5 on the resolution.
I'll move the resolution order number R1-2009-006. I believe EPA has strongly indicated that the new source regs will not be changed either way on this.
I think that's dependent upon whether or not that's only for whether it would be the same sort of mill. I don't think a determination is
made. Well, no, I understand. Of course, the new mill is... going to be a new...
If it becomes something different than what it is right now.
Right. So I believe that takes care of that. I believe the testimony took care of the preservation of the pipeline, and then I believe the other facts warrant adoption. So.
And to the maker of the motion, you would make the change to item 11, correcting the date?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I would second that motion.
Okay. Any board member comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? I know it's ground past 12, but my desire would be to do item 6 since it's all in our minds. And I'll make note in the hearing procedure, in addition to that, this is the time and place for